From the headquarters of Swinnerton, this is the Modern Built Environment podcast, featuring exclusive interviews with world-class thought leaders, executives, and civic leaders committed to a better and more beautiful built environment. Established in 1888 and built on a foundation of integrity, trust, and collaboration, our history has prepared us for this moment. Possibility is limited only by our imagination. We know what tomorrow can bring because we've seen thousands of tomorrows and are prepared to shape what comes next. Pride of ownership, peace of mind. Our podcast is hosted by Tom DiOro of The Modern Architect at KZSU at Stanford University. Go to swinnerton.com/podcast.
For our guest today, please welcome Charles M. Salter, president of Charles M. Salter & Associates. Charlie applies his expertise in design, construction, business, and the law to his practice of acoustical consulting. Currently, he manages over 100 projects involving building acoustics and environmental noise analysis. His accomplishments have included work on the Skywalker Ranch state-of-the-art post-production studios, which won National Engineering Award in 1988 and the Allied Professions Honor Award from the American Institute of Architects California Council in 98. For more information, feel free to visit cmsalter.com. That's cmsalter.com. Hello, Charlie. Welcome to the Modern Built Environment. Thank you for being on our show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Charlie, I'd like to start with, as we had one of our other shows, early inspiration, if you will. In particular, if we're going to go back to your house, I love the story you've told, and I can't hear it enough, and I've told it to many people, about how you discovered your house and knew that it was your house before you entered it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Can you share with us? How the heck did you know that?
My wife and I were looking to buy a house in Lafayette, California, and we had seen a number of homes over a 4.5 month period, and many of them were near the freeway or busy streets, and we both perceived the environment as being unacceptable and too noisy. So we found a property that was supposedly quiet, and as we approached it, we saw the oak trees, and it was a very quiet environment on a private road, and we said, this is it, even before we went into the house.
And it's still your home?
We were still living there, yes, correct.
That's amazing. Charlie, share with us, you know, we were talking before we came on the show about the subjective and versus the objective, or subjective and the objective, and what it means to you, and why.
Everybody wants to have happy clients. And so if you rely on the subjectivity of a client finding the space you designed to be perfect or noisy, then that's a very difficult way to proceed. So what I found to be successful is to have the client understand what our acoustic criteria will be for the space. So sometimes we go to their existing living room or study or office, and we ask, well, what do you think about this space? And they say, it's fine. We say, very good. We will design to make your new office as quiet as your current office. And so they understand that. They don't understand decibels or other ways of describing noise, but they understand their current environment. And so we've had great success in paying attention to the subjective aspect of acoustics and how it varies from person to person.
Wow. How does that relate? Go into corporate or federal or, you know, lead as you're talking about. How does that apply there as well? Or how is it maybe different, if it is?
Well, it's different because what you've just described are objective standards. There are industry standards for noise. And so as part of LEED or WELL or the federal government or city of San Francisco, they have requirements, and you need to meet their decibel requirements, or you'd be in violation of the statute or standard. But most people, most lay people, don't understand what that means. So we explain to them, here is the noise standard, and then here's what you have found to be acceptable. So in terms of building codes for acoustics are minimum standards. And so if you're moving into a luxury condominium and somebody says, this luxury condominium was designed minimum code requirements, you're going to scoff. What? Who cares about the minimum code? I have paid all this money. for my condominium. And so it's a matter of appreciating both the subjective and objective aspects that people are paying attention to when they commission a project.
Yeah. Can you provide some examples? We don't have to name names, but some examples of objective and subjective.
I had a client who told me that he didn't want to hear any noise in his study, a large property in Berkeley. So I said to him, you understand that acoustics is a statistical phenomenon? And he said, yes. I said, okay, if I measure the environmental noise for a day, let's say the maximum level will be 70. If I measure for a week, the maximum noise level will be 80. If I measure for a month, the maximum noise level could be 100. So what statistical level should I design to? Because every time we go up by 5 decibels, you're doubling the cost of your building. And then he says, you're right. I can't say no noise. So I said, okay, what do you think of the acoustic environment in your current study? And he said, it's fine. We went over, measured, and we benchmarked his current study, and that's what we designed his new home to meet. So it's just a matter of having these conversations with people and getting them to understand the reality of acoustical design.
Yeah, I'm biased, I believe. 100% that the acoustics matter, I guess. They really do matter. And I know that's not always a part of a project's budget. How do you go about expressing or educating the owners, the architects, the builders, all the players involved, the importance of it and the value of it?
We could be on a project where the project manager takes a position that they can't afford to provide for acoustics. And so our job is to educate that project manager about the downside risk of their thinking. So I might say, I understand you may think that you can't afford to mitigate plumbing noise in this condominium project, but plumbing noise limits are part of the ASHRAE guide, so it's an industry standard. And if you have complaints about plumbing noise, the cost of fixing it after the fact is 20 times more than doing it right the first time. It's going to be very disruptive. People are going to be very angry at you. And then I say to this project manager, and who's going to pay for it? And then I put it in writing. And then they back down. But if I were to just say, it could be noisy, they won't listen to me because, oh, noisy, because getting back to the subjectivity of noise. But if I paint a picture that is so clear and unambiguous, then they back down. That has been the approach I've developed over the years.
That's really interesting because if you don't mind, we talk about even a legal case. I don't have to name names again. I'm not sure if you were, what your capacity was in it, but you had said, and I love this, and I tell many people that you had one line that you had come up with or a sentence that would have negated the entire legal or prospective legal action. Can you share with us that a brief
I think
story?
That was the example I cited where I was working on a project and the architect, mechanical engineer, structural engineer were not listening to me about mitigating the rooftop mechanical equipment.
Okay.
And they kept ignoring me because they didn't want to do anything. And when I saw the final set of design drawings, they still hadn't vibration isolated the rooftop equipment. And so I wrote a letter to the architect, and I said to the architect, unless you vibration isolate this rooftop equipment, there's a very good chance that the penthouse unit will be unrentable. And I had my secretary write the word unrentable half-inch high letters.
Did you?
So it's unambiguous.
Yeah.
I didn't say could hear noise, people could complain. No, unrentable. And so 5 minutes later, I got a call from the architect. He thanked me for my letter. They fixed it, no problem. But so that is an example of what I found over the years, the need for clear communication. And as they say, when you say could be noisy, that's not clear. That's not clear enough.
Excellent.
Unrentable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That gets you a little nervous there. Definitely. You're listening to the Modern Built Environment podcast brought to you by Swinerton. We're talking today with Charles M. Salter, and who's president of Charles M. Salter and Associates. For more information, feel free to visit cmsalter.com. Again, that's cmsalter.com. Charlie, again, if you could touch on that, there's a way I've noticed that you have about presenting your discovery to, in particular, to those who are not either aware or have an understanding. How did that come about? Is that kind of just your DNA in that you have an understanding of how to frame the problem and a prospective solution to someone who's either doesn't care, doesn't want to know, or just is not yet informed? Because it's really really interesting how you phrase it and frame it.
There's a number of factors. My father was an attorney for 55 years. Okay. And so sitting at the dinner table with an attorney gets you to think in a particular way. Then I've been teaching acoustics at UC Berkeley, the architecture department, for 47 years. And so it's very important with architecture students to present information clearly, because if I'm not clear, they will stop me and they will say, "We have no idea what you're talking about." So over 47 years, I've gotten this feedback and I've learned how to present information in a simpler and simple, clearer way. Then I've been an expert witness in hundreds of legal cases. And when you're helping a jury or a judge understand acoustics, it needs to be very clear, because if it's not clear, they're going to tune you out. Plus, the jury is going to be angry at you because, first of all, you're wasting their time, and you are using words they don't understand. You could be erudite, you could be seemingly very smart, but you're not communicating. So all of these experiences have caused me to be thinking the way I do today.
What about the design build? A number of firms have gone to or call themselves, sometimes accurate, sometimes inaccurate, a design build firm. What's your take on that?
I've found a lot of private and public entities wanting to have design build projects. They obviously feel that it's going to save time and money. And so we're now involved in a number of design build projects. They are obviously different depending on the project manager and the needs of the project, but they're different as compared to the standard design process, where during schematic design with the standard design project, you publish a report, and then 3 months later, you get more drawings, you publish another report. With design build, everybody's moving quickly, and it is continuous design, continuous involvement with projects, as compared to the benchmarking that used to be associated with the old type of design for a project. Mm.
What's changed in your experience over the last, say, 5 to 10 years in the design build facet?
I think it's more associated with the project and the project manager rather than an entire class of projects. But a challenge that we have continuously is the clarity of the project requirements. And a lot of times, so-called bridging documents are not written in a very clear, coordinated way. So when we start a design-build project, we need to figure out what is the meaning. And obviously, there's a price associated with what the meaning is. Meanwhile, because time is the issue and acoustics can be put off to later stage of the project, they're working on the building permits and the civil engineering and the structural and the design parts that need to be addressed first. And so even though we're on these conference calls, they put us off till later. And so it's very different and invigorating, challenging. And as we gain more experience of this, we know how to handle ourselves better.
Yeah. I noticed a number of times you'd mentioned clarity.
Yes.
So obviously it's important to you. I believe it's important as well. Do you see or have you experienced a lot of clarity in the built environment? Or is that something that you think is either in part of someone's DNA, or they just learn, they understand that it's very important from experience?
My typical experience is lack of clarity.
Okay.
Where somebody writes something and then nobody checks it to make sure it makes sense or they understand it. And so that is obviously very frustrating where things are not finished and perfected. They're just written down. Board of Supervisors approves them. And then the planning department or whoever, facilities department, they're too embarrassed to go back to the decision makers and say, hey, we have no idea what this means.
Too embarrassed.
So they kind of kick the can down the road. And then we have to come along and negotiate. Well, what does this mean? Help us.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I like what you used here. At least we talked about before we got started with the show is the acoustical outcome satisfaction and how, of course, that can vary. And it varies not just from building to building, but actually, let's say you have a tenant or an owner in a building and they leave, they move on, and they think everything's perfect. They love it. And a new person comes in and says, I don't know, something bothers me, but I'm not sure quite what it is. How do you address that, change?
That is challenging to figure out what they are thinking, hearing, and so you just need to ask questions. And there was a fascinating phenomenon that occurred during the financial meltdown 10 years ago, where people overbought the homes, single-family homes, big barns of homes, and then they lost their job. And some of these people were hearing things, and they were hoping that they would find that there was a defect in the home so they can get the bank to take their house back.
Oh, my.
So we got hired by attorneys of the real estate developers to go to these homes at 3 o'clock in the morning and try and capture these sounds that these bankrupt homeowners were hearing. And then a lot of these people actually had tinnitus rather than nobody could hear these sounds. Nobody could measure these sounds. These people would swear that these sounds were there, electrical sounds. So then PG&E would shut off the power and then the sound would persist in these people's heads.
Wow.
So that's an interesting phenomenon, the psychological aspect of people really hoping that there's a defect in their home.
Yeah. Now, how about talking about restaurants in particular? Any place social where people gather, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of voices going in. Do you go into a place, a facility or a venue and find out on your own that, you know what, this place could have used how I could help them?
Well, I have a certain interest in restaurants, the ability to carry on a conversation. And obviously many of these restaurants and bars could care less about that because they're too noisy and you can't carry on a conversation. And so that owner made their choice and I therefore choose not to go there because it's insufferable to me.
Insufferable, not even bearable. How about even in public spaces? Are there any particular that if you want to share or not share, that public spaces where the acoustics are really rather pleasing?
I can't really think of a good example to cite. Davies Hall is a interesting public space to go to where a lot of people complained about Davies Hall. And then I can remember the San Francisco Chronicle wrote an article and they said, it's amazing how the Davies Hall acoustics improved when Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Philharmonic came to town.
Really?
Yeah, and so part of the complaints about the concert music could have been about the musicians and not the hall itself.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so that's what's very interesting about music acoustics and the subjective feelings that people have about acoustics.
Excellent. We're listening to the Modern Built Environment Podcast, powered by Swinnerton. We're talking today with Charles M. Salter, president of Charles M. Salter & Associates. For more information, feel free to visit cmsalter.com. Again, cmsalter.com. Charlie, can you share with us the building technologies and how they've changed, say, over the last several years and how they've impacted acoustics?
Very good. We started off as acoustical engineers, and then our clients wanted to combine audio systems with acoustics, particularly in meeting rooms. And so we started doing audio and video consulting about 25 years ago. And then technology evolved to the extent that the telecommunications system, the broadcast, linked in with audio video systems. And so we added that. And then low voltage security systems for buildings were bundled in with telecommunications as well as audio video systems. So we provide all four services. And so when we are involved in projects, sometimes people will just hire us for acoustics, and sometimes it's acoustics and security, or it's mix and match depending on client needs. And so the technology part of our business obviously is fast changing, rapidly evolving, new technologies, new interest on the part of building developers to have systems that will be future-proofed and take advantage of the new technology, but not get technologies that turn out to not be reliable. And so that's the challenge nowadays with technology in buildings.
Yeah, terrific. Charlie, is there anything that we may not have touched on in on your show to show today that you'd like to share with the audience?
Oh, we're seeing more and more interest in acoustical design for buildings and doing things right the first time. So we're happy with our work. Our firm is 45 years old, and it's great to look back at the beginning and kind of work we were doing then and people's perspective about acoustical engineering at that point in time. When I started working in acoustics, that was 52 years ago.
That's great.
In Boston, people thought about acoustics with just churches. So if you're designing a church, you need an acoustical engineer for a church, but housing or hotels, what do you need an acoustical engineer for? So it's fun to kind of look back over my history in the industry and the way that people perceive the need for acoustical engineers in buildings.
Excellent. Charlie, it's an honor and joy having you here. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Modern Built Environment podcast brought to you by Swinerton. You can find Swinerton online at swinerton.com/podcast. Again, swinerton.com/podcast. Our guest today has been Charles M. Salter, president of Charles M. Salter & Associates. For more information, feel free to visit cmsalter.com. Again, that's cmsalter.com. Please join us again next time when we welcome another leading architect, engineer, builder, manufacturer, or civic leader committed to building a better and more beautiful built environment for healthier cities, communities, and lives. I'm Tom Duro.
The Modern Built Environment podcast is recorded at the Swinerton headquarters and on location. The recording engineer is Stephen Blatton. The executive producer and host of the Modern Built Environment podcast is Tom Dioro. And we're all assisted by Mr. Eric Foster. This is the Modern Built Environment podcast by Swinerton.